Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about this podcast button. So what you would have done, perhaps, is press this button and it would have played this podcast, a preview of the podcast in the browser, or you could have downloaded it via the standard feed. I'm not quite sure how you actually download things by that standard feed. I haven't actually gone into that. So in this episode, I'm going to go in sort of various layers, peeling back, explaining how I've done various things. And as I do it, there may be some interest in it, and it's also the interest in why I've done it, or the actual strategy behind it. So we'll just look at the actual little podcast button. Now, the actual shape of the button and what's on the button, there's three pictures of me. One picture with my eyes closed, another picture with my mouth open, another picture with my eyes open. And so it goes like this, that when the button first loads, my eyes are closed, and when you put the mouse over, my mouth opens and closes. Or my mouth opens. If you take the mouse out of the field, my mouth closes. But once that's done, once you've woken me up, my eyes are open. Now, just artistically, I'm sort of a bit against this really obviousness, the emojis and stuff like that, which is really obvious and easy. Here, the eye closing is just very subtle. I just wanted something that, say, a little kid will look at and say, oh, yeah, that's look, have you noticed that? And so there's a bit of an intrigue with it. Obviously explaining it, it's no intrigue. So how I've done it, I've got those three images captured on my Logitech camera. I've had to go up to a certain grade of web camera for putting on YouTube and having sufficiently high quality microphone associated with it. It's still has the overall problem that even though I've got the image and the sound going as it's actually captured, it sort of drops 300 milliseconds occasionally. I don't quite understand what's happening with the software, so I assume my processors on my computer aren't good enough, aren't fast enough to actually cope with what's going on. So I've got that and a green screen for I suppose production, and with green screen, the key to having a green screen is having a uniform colour, which is not your own colour, so it doesn't necessarily have to be green, but it's got to be a colour that's not existent in you, and also having uniform lighting. Now, unfortunately, my uniform lighting I've taken out at side, and it's actually electrically taped above my my chair here. I've got a swinging chair out here, the front of opposite. Beside me is a school. You can hear the school and up sort of fairly large gum trees around it, and there's various kookaburras. In fact, recently in a tree by, there's actually ducks. I don't know if anyone's ever seen ducks, but in Australia, ducks actually sit high up in trees, and they call their mates, and it's quite unusual. And of course, there's always these attendance bird fights going on. So all, and then once in a while, these parrots come down and quite literally attack you, not quite attack you, but they walk up to you quite passy, these brilliant red parrots. And I've sort of gone off track here, so inside you take a photograph, and those three series of photographs to animate it, an animated GIF, and or what you do is that I didn't green screen it. Partly, this is explaining my lights out here, so I can't light myself. I had natural lighting and a fairly complex background behind me. And I then took that to NetPaint or paint.net. It's a free online software, and used a magic wand to actually eliminate areas of background, and eventually cleaned up the background of it, and reduced the size of each pitch by a factor of 10% of the picture, saved them, and then looked at, went through and see if I could get glossy to put it onto a glossy button, because If it's just a picture, people don't know to actually press the button, so it's actually got to be raised up for a picture. I should say that I haven't really consciously thought about it. I thought, looking at this podcast, some people want to have a preview. I suppose I should have organize a very lightweight preview. So what I'll do is I'll think about it down the track. And so with the preview, I've looked at the number of steps. So I used to write podcast and hyperlink the word podcast. That was taking a bit of time, so I automated that. So I didn't automate it. I then, rather than put that there, I got the software to pick up the naked URL, just print the naked URL. So you'll see the naked URL still written down there as a legacy. So if you click that, you'll get your preview. So this mouse thing, I looked at the various buttons that you can produce, and they're a bit hard work. The various buttons, there's free online glassy button generators, but they're very focused on looking like a web button. And I looked at that and tried around 10-20 minutes looking there. The upload, it just wasn't going to work. It does work really well in sort of an old style web page. You know, I don't know if you know the old style web pages from the 80s, when the web pages were web pages and they wanted it to look like machines, and you had glossy buttons and lots of things happening. Things sort of, you know, I think if you have a rotating banner, that's a time to, oh my god, this person's made their own web page. There's certain things that you don't necessarily now have in a web page. But this is sort of a low key stuff. So it's probably, it's sort of, I like it artistically. And so you take it into PaintNet, clean up the background. You put it on several layers, so you make the background invisible and put it on a layer of black. I think black. Other colours are a bit icky, I think. Black. And black gives that sort of spooky feel, an eerie feel to the picture. And so you have a black layer, and on top of it your actual picture layer with the actual background imaged off. So you eliminate it, then you flatten it. Then you reduce it down to into a JPEG 10%, so they're nice small pictures. And then there's sort of two routes you can go with it from there. You can actually take them up to glassy buttons, online glassy button generators. That really didn't work for me, although it's got a nice, beautiful rendering of a light shining, and you can generate it, but I just couldn't do it in 10 minutes, so I took it through another path, which was taken onto PowerPoint, and PowerPoint has some renderings of any shape, and the shape puts a bevel and a bit of a light associated with the bevel. It's sort of a very subtle effect, and I thought, oh, that's perhaps right, but you can't actually do compound things. You can't, well, I think you can, but I couldn't compound round the corners and also do the bevel, and so you've got a bit of a square, icky looking button. But you know, you have to get it produced, and then load those buttons up, put them onto the internet, because you want the person in Argentina or Iceland who's actually going to press on this be able to receive it, so you can't have them access your own personal computer. So I loaded the button images up to the internet. Now there's a few steps involved in that. Unfortunately, my library of stuff is HTTP and not HTTPS, and the policy on Blogger is that only likes images which are HTTPS. This is from a third site when you're doing HTML coding in Blogger. So are we with me at the moment? So I had this problem that there's this warning saying some browsers will hate this, and so I had to convert that image to something on a HTTP https, and I'm running Just Host, and Just Host charges more money for a https browser. I did it once to get through a school blockage, and it worked for a while, and then they introduced another blockage, and then I was left paying for money which I couldn't, paying for a feature which wouldn't actually deliver a product, so I dropped everything back to HTTP. But in order to do that, I then copied the pictures, my pictures, across to a Google Doc, and then published the Google Doc, and then picked up the URLs of the pictures in that Google Doc. Now, I've got to always make sure that document is forever published, so if I unpublish it, I'll lose those pictures. But those, I wonder if you do unpublish it, you lose those pictures, get wiped up. I don't know. So you actually, that's a long journey from a photograph to a processing on PaintNet to JPEG to PowerPoint, from PowerPoint to Google Docs to Google Docs to HTTPS to give you those three images. And then after that, you can execute some a button script. Now, so far I've not been able to get a proper style, what's the cascaded style sheet, CSS, to work on Blogger. That's perhaps sort of lack of competence. But you have to use work back to native HTML, which is cascaded style sheet is references which go into native HTML. Just means you write it out in longhand there. And so essentially you've got the click function. So I've got the, it's going in my head, I think it's A-B-R-E-V to actually put a hyperlink in. So you put, it's a markup language, so I decided I wouldn't put it as a button, so I put a hyperlink click through, which is a brev, and then a href, the actual click through link. So how do you automate that? I'll come to that a bit later on. And then you have the image, and so the image is various things. And if you actually get up on a coding thing, which sort of irritates me a bit, because the browser says, look, you can have a HTML thing, and it's like you're scripting HTML in Notepad. You get no color cues to what's going on, whereas a HTML editor, so you, in your Blogger, you have the compose button in text or WYSIWYG, and or you can go press HTML and actually get the markup language. But the HTML provided by Blogger doesn't have the color markup, so it's like it's a really poor quality HTML code. But you have several I don't know what the technical term is for it, because I've really never ever spoken to anyone about it. I've always just quietly just done HTML when it's necessary. I see this little kid going across the road with their beautiful Rube Bowl Goldberg stuff. So I'll talk to you a bit about that later on. So where we're at. So it's the actual first the image and on hover. So on hover, the mouth opens. On mouse out, the eyes are open. So the first image, the eyes are closed. On mouth over, the mouth is open. On mouse out, the eyes are open. So it's asleep, mouth open, and eyes open in that sequence there. And then a tool tip, which is href. I.e. that's to get a tooltip, space title equals, and then just basically, so when you put your mouse over it, gives you a tooltip. I think there's, I once did really early on audio, so when you put it there, which would help my wife's blind, so that would be Don't know, audio description. So this, unfortunately, is all completely inaccessible to disabled people. So I don't know. I will probably just leave the standard URL link. You know, where is the button? I'd have to have alt text. Oh, I'll probably put alt text in it eventually. Where it just, you know, so when visually impaired people read the screen, they can actually read in alt text. So that provides the actual HTML level a button, and of course this button obviously will be put there, and for any piece of any podcast, it will point to a different MP3 file on the net. The MP3 file, when it's played, has got a black background. Now, I don't know whether I can actually link an image into that. So I know the HTML, so the MP3 file structure has metadata on the front of it, and it may have an image container in it. So I don't know whether the black on that will have an image, and what the benefit of having an image there in the overall rollout strategy. So the rollout strategy of this is to make it target students down the track, so they can go along, read something, and press it, and actually listen to something on their smartphones in the dark. As they go to and from school, or I don't know, spend some time there. So that's the overall plot. And so you've got some HTML. HTML, and it's got to have it's got to have a bespoke URL that it's linked to. So I suppose there's other things, there's other attributes which I can vary from time to time. I was just trying to think. I could change the tool, have different tool tips. I don't know. I have to think about what I do there. So we have this overall problem that I've got some HTML code, it's a generic code, and I've got to actually restructure it and get it into a blogger, into the blogger. So that's that first layer of stuff. And with that sort of coming up, I've had the general knowledge that I have to make it more accessible than a standard podcast, have a preview button where you can actually preview it. And this is I've got a basic lack of knowledge about podcasting. Unfortunately, even though I'm automating, I don't have anyone that I speak to, or any community or official support. So I suppose people turn up their nose and say, oh, look, you're just an amateur, you're not professional. And that is true. And so I'm just trying to crack through, develop enough content, enough assets there that when a professional comes along, they can actually tweak it, and I'm in a position to understand it. If you speak to a professional before you've actually done anything, it's sort of cognitive load. They tell you stuff, and you have to actually feed that into the direction that you're going, and that can sometimes obscure other knowledge that you know. So yeah, this is one of the things that you come across when you speak to professionals in a field, that they are unaware of your access or your interaction on other fields, that you're balancing the information. So it's some quite hard yards. So I just, in general, had the idea that I had to do this and make it accessible. So I knew that I had to do something, but I had no real plan. So it's sort of just unfolded there, and I had sort of some artistic viewpoints. My overall artistic viewpoint is not to have it just have it a button shape so people know to press a button, but have it slightly weird and not extremely high resolution, because that's a bit, I just have it on the what they call uncanny valley. It's a little bit weird to press what's going forward. But we have this general thing. We've been able to produce a general HTML code, and we have to change that code for every page. Now, there's a you can email, get your command line, get your LabVIEW to run a command line email through yet another app. I just really hate this. I hate using third-party apps all sprinkled through it, because it means that you have to load those apps on your cloud computer. So I'll talk about the cloud computer in a bit later on. And so what you do is, for the link, you just type the word link. You have the text of your HTML, and the HTML file text has substitutes. It finds and replaces, so it finds the word link and replaces it with the actual HTTP link of the MP3, and the MP3 is modified such that it always runs in every browser, so the spaces are replaced with that percentage 20%, you know, that's common stuff. So there's a simple LabVIEW sub VI that's provided, which is search and replace text. So you feed in the text into one terminal, the what it's looking for, and what's replaced in another, and that other stuff is wired across in LabVIEW. And so what happens is is then fed, written onto a local file, and the local file's name is something stupid at the moment. I'll just have to, that's reminded me, I'll have to lock that down. I have to remember whether, I just hope I haven't got that on a front panel and saved it across, so I've got to make it default. So as I'm just going through, I realise that it's going to be a mistake. These mistakes get fixed up pretty quickly, but I'm just talking through, it's ahead. So I have a local file. So what happens is it writes the combination button and the podcast text to a local web file, and then the web, because you can't actually open up your blogger via email and write HTML, but you can attach a HTML file to your blogger. That's an interesting thing. I should think about that. So to the email, which is then the blogger then puts in, and of course still is code. It's not absolutely perfect because it publishes it, but you still then have to place a tag so it's picked up by a feeder, so that things on a feeder. And there's workarounds for that. So that's the overall policy. And so if you know in advance that you can do these things, you know that you can sort of put that in your background and say, look, I'll just have a general feel. So you're not like, I'm not thinking about all these things at one time. I've sort of said, yeah, yep, I can do that. And you don't consciously think about it. You say, oh, yep. And so you know this general policy without really consciously thinking about it. That's slowly upgrading the podcasts, and then the podcasts are on follow general themes. So there's that button. So that button there has finally got up to a limit there. I'm going to have another button which goes to related podcasts. So once you've pulled up the podcast or the blog, you can actually press it and scan for other related topics. And again, I haven't really thought about it. Oh, look, there's I can't tell you to look, but there's a satin bowerbird just around the place, and you might hear it. No, it's not looking faint. It makes a fairly amazing noise. It's just around the place looking for food. So it's this satin blue bird going about the place. Okay, you can see that I'm easily distracted by birds and stuff like that. I can put in something which looks at themes of the different podcasts. The overall thing is perhaps automating it so that when I do a podcast, I click a button on the theme area and it looks to the last podcast given that theme and automatically puts it, links you back. So it will create a link so you can link back through the themes. So I've just got to think a bit about how that's organized ahead, just in the background. I'll do that in the next week or so. And so that creates that click-through stuff, you know, in YouTube where it says related videos, and you have to put it up there. The only problem is that YouTube requires you to actually physically manually code it, so that's extremely hard work. So what I think I'll do is create a parallel tag universe for it and actually structure all the podcasts so you can go back through different themes and navigate back through different themes, because I don't think people are going through the archives or going through the effort to go through through various themes. And so this is the overall sort of links of actually in the podcast building up the automation, such as got more use through social media. There's there's these other structures you can put in, which I have put in before on it. There's also putting up on their an app. So one of the things I do using this, the same sort of generic technology, is that for every I can actually produce an app per podcast. So I might put it, I have to work out how I put the apps there. So there's a few, one or two podcasts which have an associated app, and I'll have to do a podcast on how to do it. I think I did it for, did a podcast explaining corrugated numbers, which is the maths for generation of these live apps. And as I was explaining magnetic materials, I've developed a an app to explain magnetic materials, explaining all the components there. And unlike a normal app, this app grows and develops as I work on it. So it's a web app, so it emulates an app. It's a web emulation, a website which emulates an app. There you go. So there's that overall policy. It's that overall link. So it's podcast has efficient, I don't know, we call it physics, it will be impedance matching. So the podcast has got sufficient bandwidth such that I can talk and develop my mental rehab. And there's some interesting things with the mental rehab, as they're finding now, the mental rehab to produce a sufficient volume. So I could produce YouTubes, but that would take, I'd have to work 24 hours a day to produce 3 YouTubes, good quality YouTubes a day, and I could get an audience from there, and it could be large, but I'd just wipe myself off. And the problem is that you can't produce and develop at the same time, and that YouTube's also got these useful features, but you can't automate them, and it's just mind-blowingly hard to do. This is the podcast, so we've moved up through various layers. So if I just give you the strategy of the actual implementation of a button, strategy of the deployment of a button through Blogger. The strategy is to do podcasting, to actually just start to add in some social infrastructure to it. That is with no extra work, so it means that I have to deploy a certain amount of time per day to do the podcasting, and then just in the background, just have a good old think about how I'm going to actually link it all together. And ultimately, it would be great if I could have invited guests into this podcast universe. That's when it would really take off. So there's these really take off points. One is, the button, the structuring of a podcast, tagging stuff, and I've got to think of the tags and whether what the tags are mathematically, just not just word stuff, but what the categories are. So that would be an interesting interesting stuff. So you can say press two buttons. One is for the topic and the depth of the topic, and a linkage up. I'm gonna have to really, really think about how that's done. But I think it could be quite easily produced. So you've got a lot of latitude if you've got robotic software which can write web pages, so that can actually just harvest stuff. And it sort of takes the memory work and the management out of it. So there's that layer, but then there's the layer of the podcast to the feed burner to the Twitter, and then the feed burner to the iTunes. And they're not necessarily taking off and cross-linking it. Where I just can't see a way through is podcast to Facebook and linking Facebook across and Instagram. I just really don't even know what Instagram is. I really actually also don't know what Facebook is. I don't quite. I can see its user users can interact with it, but it's something which is requiring a huge amount of lifetime to operate. It's something I think in years to come people will be just amazed that people will have spent. It's something which is addictive and has people spend so much time on it, generating content and reading content. It's just mind blowing. So there's that. We're up to the fourth layer of strategy, and the fifth layer of strategy is the general thing, and the entire thing is that if you know the outcome of things, what's going ahead, if you know what's going to happen, it's just a plan. You're following a plan. It's not necessarily a strategy. To run a genuine strategy, there's a difference between strategy and tactics. Strategy is more abstract. It's changing the mindset with which you can approach a problem. But that's one aspect. But another aspect of strategy is that you don't fully have all the information at hand. So you're doing a series, you're making a plan, a tentative plan, based on your ability to solve an upcoming problem if you really look into strategy. And so this is the highest level of strategy, of looking at the return to work with people who will put you in and assess you and stuff like that, and you've got to try and develop a sort of counter strategy to that. So they've got a strategy of making it perhaps difficult for you to return or difficult to perform, and the overall strategy is to acknowledge that and work out, well, if I do nothing, that will definitely happen. If I don't cognitively get back, and if I don't actually develop all the software, I won't get back. But it won't necessarily work. I may not be able to actually get all the linkage and all the little ducks lined up, but at least I've tried to do it. And there's sort of a strategy within that when you're trying to do it, you can uncover linkages and opportunities which you can't. Sort of it's like the idea of reconnaissance, i.e. you have to conduct in military stuff a complete time. It's an adage, I don't know where it comes from, whether it's just an Australian or not, or it's a general adage, that time spent in reconnaissance is never wasted. And the issue with reconnaissance is that if you have a preconception and you're only looking for what you're looking at, you will not actually do as good a reconnaissance if you have a disinterest in the information coming in and working through. So with this, perhaps I'm up against too much, but I've got a disinterest in trying to find out opportunities as we go through, and that's the direction through it. So it's a small button, there's it's artistically driven, so I have produced web art before, and you know what people have said. You know, I've produced honest large amount of web art, or not web art, digital art before, And people have said, look, that's really bad. It's rubbish. Well, no, kids have liked it, but, you know, the people who know say it's rubbish. Well, what can I do? I'm not standing there as a professional artist. So that's sort of just the only thing I have available. So I'm open to honest improvement if people don't like it. I've sort of have the idea of that I'd like to actually have something to do with a three-dimensional rendering. That would really help me. So that's the story so far. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.